From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Pamela Wu, in for Beth Ruyak. Tensions are high in Washington and across the nation today on the eve of the U.S. Senate vote on whether to confirm Judge Brett Kavanaugh as the next Supreme Court Justice of the United States. He is accused of sexual assault and misconduct during his time in high school and college. Those allegations have led to a bitter partisan battle. Here in California, our state laws are changing following the Me Too movement. Lawmakers introduced more than 24 bills to fight workplace misconduct and hold offenders accountable. As he is known to do, Governor Jerry Brown was a little unpredictable. He sided with victims' advocates in some cases and sided with employers in some others. CalMatters reporter Laurel Rosenhall joins us for a Capital Chat with a rundown of how Governor Brown approached the Me Too-inspired bills that sought his signature. Laurel, welcome to Insight.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So lawmakers introduced more than 24 bills this year that were inspired by the Me Too movement. What was the political dynamic on this issue? Who was for the bills and who was lobbying against them?
Well, in general, this wasn't true on every single bill, but the general dynamic was you had kind of the women's rights, victim advocates, trial lawyers, and some labor unions kind of on the side of lobbying for these new bills. And then you had the big business, employer groups, the Chamber of Commerce, and groups that are really concerned about litigation abuse that were lobbying against them. The most controversial of these bills, they would in some way make it easier for workers to sue over sexual harassment. So that was kind of the big concern for employers. And then therefore that makes it kind of very like a political hot potato.
And as we said, there were more than 24 bills, mm-hmm. really numerous. Whose side did Governor Brown fall on when he reviewed these numerous bills?
Yeah, like you said in the opening, he really mixed it up. He's famous for saying that his approach to politics is, you know, paddle a little on the left and a little on the right, and that's how you get your canoe to go straight down the center. And that's exactly what he did on these Me Too bills. In some cases, he sided with the victims' advocates. In other cases, he sided with the employers. And he signed, you know, one bill that will kind of expand the possibility for lawsuits, and he vetoed another that would have expanded it. So it was a mixed bag.
So let's break down those that did become law mm-hmm. and those that did not. What are some of the new laws that he signed?
So a big one is that, you know, starting next year, there's going to be no more secrecy clauses allowed in settlements for sexual misconduct unless of the victim wants it. He signed a bill that's going to basically require more workplaces to have sexual harassment prevention training. So now instead of workplaces that have 50 or more employees, it's going to be those that have 5 or more. So almost all, you know, companies. He signed an interesting law that's going to require California-based companies to add more women to their boards of directors. And he had an interesting signing message with that one, basically saying that he was kind of unsure about the policy, but believed in the goal and the symbolism of it. And so he was signing it anyway. It was pretty unusual. And then another one he signed that that will make it easier for people to sue for sexual harassment changes the legal standard. You know, previously, in order to bring a sexual harassment case, you had to prove that it was a severe or pervasive problem. That was kind of the phrase in prior court rulings. And the law that he signed basically says one incident is enough. You know, if there's one incident of harassment, that's enough to legally meet the criteria.
Well, had there previously been questions about that?
Yes. And there was almost 20 years ago, there was a ruling in a case with a woman who was a 911 dispatcher in San Mateo who had been groped by a colleague who actually reached his hand inside her shirt, grabbed her breast while she was taking a 911 call, and the colleague ended up spending time in jail on a criminal conviction. But when this woman brought a civil lawsuit, the judge said because it wasn't severe or pervasive, because it was one incident, it was not sexual harassment under the civil code.
As if to say that a one-off is permissible.
Exactly. And so for many years, advocates in this space have said, oh, the law allows one free grope. That was kind of the phrase that they coined.
Wow.
One free grope. Yeah. So Jerry Brown, with his signature, changed that law so that in layman's terms, the law now says, you know, no free gropes.
No free gropes.
Yeah.
So what are some of the bills that he vetoed then?
Well, you know, one that I was really surprised by, there was a bill that basically just required the state government to track harassment complaints and settlements in an annual public report, just kind of some basic government transparency. He vetoed that one. There was a very contentious bill that had to do with arbitration clauses. Mm-hmm. This is kind of what a way that companies sort of push their conflicts with employees into the private arbitration setting rather than into the public court system. And he vetoed that one that would have basically tried to get rid of arbitration, mandatory arbitration. He vetoed one that would require businesses to keep harassment records on file for at least 5 years. And he also vetoed one that simply extended the amount of time from 1 year to 3 years for harassment victims to file complaints. Both of those last two would have sort of in some ways made it easier to bring a lawsuit. If you have, you know, more time to file your complaint, that means more people can complain. That means it can lead to more lawsuits. So he did veto those as well.
I would imagine that last one you mentioned, that the employers were lobbying against that one.
Yeah. You know, like I said, a lot of these, you know, some of these bills kind of targeted government employment, but a lot of them targeted employment much more broadly. And the private sector definitely did push back. The arbitration, the bill to ban mandatory arbitration was the only bill at the end of session that the California Chamber of Commerce called a job killer, which is kind of like their most, those are the bills that they want to kill the most. And so they got a veto, which is what they wanted.
Was there any discernible pattern to what he signed and what he vetoed?
You know, there are some advocates, and one assemblywoman from San Diego, Democratic assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez-Fletcher, who really felt like the bills he signed will mostly help women who work in professional settings, that these are more going to help the kind of white collar employment sector, and that those he vetoed were the ones that would have done more for working class workers. And so, you know, low wage workers like janitors or maids or waitresses and sales clerks. The arbitration issue is kind of a clause that apparently is very common in these employment contracts for those sort of hourly worker jobs. And so that one definitely would have impacted that sector, as well as the one allowing for more time. You know, the advocates I spoke with said that a lot of these low-wage workers are, you know, they're just not as familiar with the law. They don't have as much easy access to attorneys and may not know when something happens to them that it's against the law in the first place. So the bill that would have extended the amount of time to complain from 1 year, which is the law now, to 3 years, which was the proposal he vetoed, would have mostly had the impact of helping those low-wage workers.
I'm talking with CalMatters reporter Laurel Rosenhall about new laws that Governor Brown signed last week that relate to the Me Too movement and the We Said Enough campaign. Laurel, where do you see things headed next, especially now that Governor Brown is leaving office?
Right. So next year we'll have a new governor, and I don't think this fight is over. I mean, there were enough bills kind of left on the cutting room floor here that I anticipate a lot of these will be back next year, and that the legislators and the advocates who are pushing for them are going to try to make their case to a different governor, particularly on the bill regarding mandatory arbitration. That one was backed by the labor unions. It was very important to them. They brought out a full kind of cast of celebrities to lobby for this bill throughout the year, including Jane Fonda mm-hmm. came to Sacramento, Gretchen Carlson, the Fox News personality who had sued her employer. And another interesting celebrity lobbying for that bill was Jennifer Siebel Newsom. And of course, she is the feminist filmmaker who is married to Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. And so if he is in the governor's office next year, that's kind of an interesting advocate. The supporters of this bill will definitely have a very powerful ally on their side.
Absolutely. Let's touch briefly on what's happening in Washington today. All eyes are on the U.S. Senate as the nation awaits the vote on whether Judge Brett Kavanaugh of the D.C. Circuit is going to be elevated to the U.S. Supreme Court, the nation's highest court. California Senator Dianne Feinstein has played a very prominent role throughout this and for numerous reasons. Can you talk about how the drama in Washington has colored the California Senate race?
Yeah, it's really added a really interesting layer to the race that was already an interesting race because Dianne Feinstein is getting challenged from the left by State Senator Kevin DeLeon, who's also a Democrat. And of course, we have this top two system in California, which means that on the ballot, we'll have two Democrats this fall. Republicans are absolutely incensed with how Dianne Feinstein has handled this situation, saying that she had known for so long about this allegation because, of course, Christine Blasey Ford told Feinstein about it back in early in the summer in July. And Feinstein held on to it, and didn't say anything throughout her private meetings with Judge Kavanaugh, throughout the public hearings with Judge Kavanaugh. And Republicans feel like she kind of held on to it till the last minute and then launched this effort to try to derail his confirmation, which they understandably feel is kind of rightfully, it's their pick. They have the majority. The president is a Republican. They get to kind of choose how it goes.
And Senator Feinstein has said that the reason that she held on to that information was at the request of Dr. Ford.
Exactly. And Dr. Ford has publicly said that she is pleased with how Senator Feinstein handled the situation. You have what's going on is you have the Republicans attacking Feinstein for this, but Feinstein is not meeting a Republican challenger. And so you also have her being attacked by Kevin DeLeon, her Democratic challenger, who's interestingly, even though he's even more liberal than she is, he's kind of making the same arguments that the Republicans are in this case. Why did she hold on that letter in secret for so long?
It's like partisanship is so entrenched, but can be fleeting during a campaign,
right, exactly,
as well. And as you said, Kevin DeLeon did blast Feinstein pretty aggressively,
yeah,
over how she handled the accuser's information. Here in California, what has the sort of reaction been to that criticism?
This is a case where I think this is an attack that backfired among Democrats and oddly maybe helping him get Republican votes, which is very strange because in terms of his policy priorities, there's really nothing about his policies that your typical Republican would embrace. He's the author of the Sanctuary State Bill, which basically adds new protections for undocumented immigrants. He's super strong on gun control. He's a big kind of climate activist and, pushed for cap and trade and other climate change programs, clean electricity. So your typical Republican in California would really not align with his interests and his priorities. But it's the old my enemy's enemy is my friend. And there are now some Republicans saying that they're going to vote for him just because he's not Feinstein. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, there's been a lot of blowback against him from Democratic women who are basically saying, how dare you try to say how you would handle this woman's complaint? She likes how Senator Feinstein handled it. She's the victim. She gets to decide how to tell her story. If she wanted to keep it in confidence, then that's her decision. And there are a lot of women in California who feel like Democratic women who feel like Feinstein handled this situation with enormous aplomb. And so DeLeon attacking her is kind of just adding more fire to their favorable feelings about Senator Feinstein.
And in the meantime, all eyes on Washington as the vote on Brett Kavanaugh is scheduled for tomorrow. That's Laurel Rosenhall from CalMatters for this week's Capital Chat. Laurel, thank you for being on Insight.
Thanks, Pam.
We have full political coverage on our website, capradio.org/insight. And you are listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.
We got support from Brookfield School, preschool through eighth grade, dedicated to challenging each student to reach full potential through a dynamic curriculum and a tradition of cultivating character and excellence. Learn more at brookfieldschool.org. And we got support from Taste Restaurant in Plymouth, announcing a winemaker dinner featuring Fate Wines Sunday, October 21st, pairing seasonal menu favorites with wines of Amador County. Reservations at restauranttaste.com.
Coming up next on Insight with Pamela Wu, we're going to hear about an art exhibit called Journey of Hope, telling stories and raising awareness about mental illness to fight the stigma that surrounds it. And that's coming up next on Insight with Pamela Wu, filling in for Beth Ruyak. This is the kind of programming that you count on from CAP Radio. Please call and support it with a contribution at 1-800-800-5867. I'm Steve Milne with Sammy Kayola.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
It is our fun drive. It's an exciting time here at the station, and it's an extra exciting time because we have a special match program right now, which means if you make a donation to CAP Radio, it's going to work twice as hard toward our mission of sustaining our community with facts and entertainment. Every donation that you make is going to be matched up to $100,000. That is going to go a really long way for what we do here at CAP Radio. So if you've been looking for the right time to donate, this is a good time. It's going to go double. That's a big deal. You can do that by calling us at 1-800-800-5867. Here's that number again, 1-800-800-5867. You can do it online safely and securely at capradio.org.
How about this when you contribute to CAP Radio and support programs like Insight? Get a pair of CAP Radio-themed wireless headphones. They're perfect for listening to Insight and keeping up with NPR and CAP Radio news, plus music shows like Hey Listen on Saturday nights. Ask for the wireless headphones when you make a monthly gift of $30 or more. Go to capradio.org or call us at 1-800-800-5867.
You know what else wireless headphones are good for, Steve?
No.
Dance parties.
Oh.
Yeah, you don't get tangled up in that cord.
Yeah, good point.
And we have another special thank you gift. Anybody who donates right now gets a collection of CAP Radio stickers. They are really cute, and they really nod to some of our favorite programs here at CAP Radio, and they can go on your computer or your bike helmet or your coffee mug, really anything. So that'll show your support, you know, if you really identify with a member of Capital Public Radio. If that's important to you, call now and donate. Get those stickers. That's at 1-800-800-5867.
Insight and CAP Radio News keeps you connected with fascinating people in your community doing really amazing things, and it's worth your support. You listen to Insight, you listen to Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and Science Friday coming up a little bit later. These are programs that you depend on to keep you informed and entertained. CAP Radio is counting on you to help pay for it with a contribution. So please do it now, 1-800-800-5867.
And one of the best ways to donate is to go evergreen. That means that you give us your bank account information and you're always on our files as a monthly sustainer. So you don't have to worry about whether your membership is current, because you are current. You are one of our sustaining members and you help keep us going. So it's time to go evergreen, and you'll be entered into our grand prize drawings. This time that includes a trip to the Galapagos Islands and the Amazon rainforest valued at $9,000. The best way to be entered is to go evergreen. You can do that by calling 1-800-800-5867. It's 1-800-800-5867, or hop online at capradio.org.
Yeah, donate for everything you hear. Insight, Marketplace, Morning Edition, they all count. Make your donation now by phone at 1-800-800-5867 or online at capradio.org.